This is another iRaw podcast.
We expect to see that. But what we don't expect is that the people doing the same thing we're doing, working against us or being overly critical of one another. Like we have that so much in rescue. And I know it comes from a place of extreme care, but I think a lot of times, and you know, I haven't said this outright like this a lot, but I'm saying it now, is a lot of times in rescue right now, currently, a lot of people are walking around burnt out and they don't know it. They don't know that they burnt out.
My name is Katya, and this is The Animal That Changed You. I believe loving an animal is one of the most accessible, most available portals for self-healing in the whole world. It's my privilege to encourage you to open your heart to animals and challenge you to deepen your compassion just a little bit more. Welcome to The Animal That Changed You.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to The Animal That Changed You. I'm so happy to be hanging out with you. What are you doing right now as you listen to this? Are you hugging a dog or a cat or a gerbil, hamster, bunny, you know, ferret? Are you watching the birds outside, the squirrels? In my case, the armadillos, because there's a family of them who live underneath my house still. Are you riding a horse? That would be cool if you're horseback riding while listening to this. What is going on with animals right now? I want to acknowledge it. And I think it's cool, whatever it is. Maybe nothing's going on, but as I say these words, you look out the window and something catches your eye. Some wonderful animal, some soul out there. Dog walking by with their owner, something. I don't know. Maybe it's insects. Is there a ladybug around you? I hope not a bee. Although they do deserve to be around. I love bees. Shout out to bees, just not on me, stinging me. But I think they're very cool. Before I go down this rabbit hole of bees, I want to tell you that I don't pick favorites. Like, I love all my guests. I truly adore having conversations about animals and connections and relationships with animals and who they are and how they've changed our lives. I just find it to be the most fun, the funnest. And I like doing that with you. And yet I will say that today's episode, this conversation, is really one of my favorite conversations. It just meant a lot to me and it was so fun. And it's with Sterling Trap King Davis. That's who today's talk is with. Sterling is the founder of Trap King Humane Cat Solutions, which is an animal welfare nonprofit. And he's so cool and just traps and helps and saves so many cats out there. Can you imagine that? This episode, when it drops, Sterling is going to be on his way to Greece, as in the country, where he's going to educate people in Greece, children, adults, government officials, about the stray cat population crisis that they face, and just thinking about how we can prevent cruelty and suffering for community cats, how to help them, the importance of TNR, which is trap, neuter, return, and you know, the importance of humane methods of controlling feline populations. But I just think that's so cool that not only is he doing it here in the USA, he is going abroad to bring his sort of out-of-the-box, innovative, not necessarily ways of helping cats, but yeah, ways he's helping cats. I mean, tons of people do TNR, tons of people help community cats and cat colonies. But what's so cool about Sterling is that it is his life and it's the way he looks at rescuing animals. It's the way he embodies the vibe that is making such a huge difference. And you'll hear about that here today. Anyways, I'm so glad you're with us. I think you're wonderful. And I hope that you enjoy this talk as much as I did.
Sterling Trap King Davis, hi. Welcome to The Animal That Changed You.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. A little geek out about you, sir. Ex-military, music enthusiast, cat enthusiast. We're going to focus on the cats. But I did want to bring that up because I am riveted by this life choice you made to sort of lay down your music career for your passion and your purpose, which is helping cats, and how that all came about through your work in TNR. And I believe you're a shelter person, like from the beginning, like I am. And I know that that's its own beginning.
Yeah, right.
You own Trap King Humane Cat Solutions, which educates, assists communities, and does TNR in communities to keep cats safe. And also the people who love them or who don't love them, but live there with them, the human beings who we need in order to save animals. You're a speaker. You have this awesome motto, you don't lose cool points for compassion, which is pretty much the coolest motto I've heard in a long time. And I love that you've got this van dwelling, mobile life, where you really can drive to the communities that need your help and improve the lives of outdoor cats and all the people who are so excited when you show up. So we are going to just talk about you and the animal that changed you and how you started and everything, Trap King David. So I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. It is a wild lifestyle, but I love it. I love it. I love, and I kind of understand the journey getting to this point a little more now. It's like you have things that happen in your life, and then it's not until many years later you realize, oh, I think I know why that happened now, or I think that was like that because it had to be like this later on. So
yeah.
Reflection. My life was full of those turns and those type of reflections.
Now you live in Atlanta, right? Did you grow up in Atlanta? Is that where you're from?
No, I live in Atlanta, and I'm traveling some everywhere actually, but I was originally from Detroit, Michigan. That's where I was born. I lived in Detroit for a while. I moved to California. I lived in Los Angeles, Washington State. Wow. So I've lived and tried. And then I was in the military too. So I've lived in a lot of places, traveled a lot. Growing up with abuse and things like that, I traveled and moved around a lot with my family.
That must have been really hard.
It was, you know, it's a trip because it's not, I don't know, for whatever reason, it seems like when you're younger, certain things like cats or animals, just certain things will block you from completely feeling it, or how a lot of that trauma makes you who you are again. Like you say, you don't know, you can't tell till years after the fact. But I think going through all of that stuff is how I got where I'm at now. It humbles you and it puts you in a position to want to live a life of service and help others like that.
Totally. And I also think it helps you identify with animals who are struggling. I know I've read and your posts, your website, and heard you talk about the voiceless and being sort of the voice for them. And so it gives you that compassion, that empathy where you want to do that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You've experienced it.
Yeah. Dealing with abuse, when you, a child being abused and you in that situation, when you feel like that's the people that's put in place to care for you. So you feel kind of voiceless in that situation. You're a kid. Where do you go? What do you say? So you feel voiceless in that situation. So a lot of times I feel it with the cats. Like I'll see a cat outside going through something, and I instantly feel like, who's going to speak for that cat? Just like when I was a kid, who's going to speak for me? Who's going to say that? What needs to be said and done? Who's going to do it?
Oh my God. That is really powerful. You know, you're talking about reflection is like one of the things I love the most about animals is they give me the gift of reflection. Like when I'm with my animals, I'm tuning into them. And when I'm tuning into them, what I'm really doing is tuning into me at the same time.
Right.
It's bananas, but I believe you that you feel it. And I also want to believe that those cats sense it, because for you to stand there on a street and close off to everything else, but connecting to that cat, there's no way they don't know that you're doing that.
Oh yeah. They feel, I'm a firm believer in that. Like the vibe, the connection. I'm a firm believer in that, because a lot of their things is body language. When we learn about cats, it's, you know, what the ears look like, how's the tail moving, you know, is their back arched up? We learn a lot about the body language. So they feel, they can sense it. They can see your body language. They can feel it. Cats definitely know.
Their bodies, by the way, are amazing. When I see a cat
contort,
I'm like, you're made of gummy. You're made of gummy bear. You're made of the substance of a gummy bear. Like you're twisting, you're licking the back of your leg somehow. They're marvelous beings.
I love it.
were you a cat lover as a kid when you were growing up, dealing with what you were dealing with? Were you attracted to cats, animals? Were you seeking that solace?
always cats. I've always been a fan of cats in every form of a cat, a lion, a tiger, a panther, a domestic cat, a tabby, a tortie. It don't matter what kind of cat, I've always had a thing with cats. I love animals, and I became vegetarian at a really young age, like 12 or 13 years old, because of my love for animals. But cats in particular, for some reason, it's been right there. But I've always, like I said, when I was little, because I grew up in an abusive household, I didn't want to go in the house. I hated going in the house. So you stay out as long as you can. And that was my thing. I would be out playing with stray cats because I couldn't bring any in. My mom was not going to let me bring none of those cats in the house. So you
Oh
sit
my God.
outside and you play with, you kill all the time you can before you got to go back in the house and deal with that reality. So that was, yeah, I would be outside playing with stray feral cats, feeding them. I done snuck them in my grandmother's basement and got in trouble for it.
Okay, I have so many follow-up questions to this. Do you use any of the techniques that you feel like were intuitive to you as a kid when you're trapping cats, when you're working with cats? Like, are there things that you have been doing since you were that kid? A, and B, what is it like to be a man and have that deep of a connection with cats? Which I feel like cats, you got to be lucky to be a cat in this life. You know, how where your fate, you can be adored, but it can be real hard. I grew up in a border town where I had friends, Sterling, people who were my buddies, who like thought it was fun to wear their boots and find cats and kick them. And I would sob. I would sob. I was 10, 11 years old. I became a vegetarian, just like you, really similar. I guess it's how we come out. And I remember just being like, why are you doing that? Why is that fun? Why is that a pastime? And I think it had something to do with identity. I don't know. I truly don't know. I'm hoping you'll answer.
I really don't. I don't understand where the lack of compassion comes at that age. Like when I was little, it was always there. I always had that compassion for cats. It seemed like it was always there. When people don't, I don't understand. Like you said, with kicking the cat deal, I've actually gone, I went to court with a young man that kicked the cat, and he put it on Instagram. Kicked the cat, put it on Instagram. It was in slow motion. The cat flew in the air, hit the ground, and the cat ran off. And
No.
everybody, of course, when animal welfare people, when we got a hold to it, everybody was in court wearing red, pushing for him to have a felony. And I went to court, and my thing was to both the attorneys and the judge, this young man needs to spend his community service with somebody like me. It would make no sense for him to go picking up paper on the side of the road and not learn from what he did. He needs to understand what he did was wrong and the severity of it. But a lot of times it's no rehab for stuff like that. And I think it needs to be more compassion taught up front. And then in crimes with animals, we need to the rehabil we there needs to be rehabilitation, not like I said, like that picking up trash on the side of the road. And I know that got off subject, but I had to get on that when you said kick
No, I'm
that.
really glad you actually said that, because what you're saying is, oof, that really gave me a chill. That idea that like someone commits a crime against animals, their punishment should involve animals. We should say to them, like, I'm going to trust you to change now, instead of like, I already have written you off. You're already a hopeless case, and go do whatever bullshit thing and
Right. And like where I come from, like my uncles have been in prison. I know people that's been in prison. If there's no rehabilitation behind it, they eventually make their way back
if we
for a
don't
lot of the same stuff.
and if we don't but if we don't invest in people and we don't invest in animals, then right, like what is the what do we think is going to happen?
Exactly. Speaking of which, come here. Come say hey, mama.
Who's this?
This is Alanis Morissette. Hey, Alanis. Say hey.
Oh my
Hey,
God, she's
mama.
so beautiful. Everyone listening, I am looking at a white, fluffy bunny cat. I'm gonna call her. I'm just gonna say she's a bunny. She's very sophisticated. I feel like she could teach me all about the things I don't know, which is most things.
This one here, she is, of course, all my cats are rescue cats, but this one here, literally, I wasn't trying to keep her at all. The vet, when I took, she was supposed to be a regular TNR cat. And the vet sent me a text and was like, Sterling, I'm not ear tipping this cat. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You got to ear tip the cats. What do you mean? It's a TNR cat. She was like, no, she is over here, slow blinking and headbutting the vet tech. She's a sweetheart. You need to find her a home. And I was like, I live in my vehicle. I'm not. And I sat around for a couple of days, like, I'm not keeping his cat. I'm not keeping his cat. And then here we have it.
She had another plan. And what can you do? Okay, I'm going to have several follow-up questions to everything you say, because you're just lighting my brain on fire. One, can you explain to anyone who's listening who doesn't know what TNR is, what it is, what it stands for? And two, a rude question. This is rude. How many cats live with you in your van?
So I have two cats. I have two cats that live with me that go everywhere with me. Alanis Muissette and Demita Joe. I'm not sure where Demita is right now, but Alanis, because I named Alanis after Alanis Morissette, who I love a lot. I overplay Jagged Little Pill.
Me too.
And Demita Joe, because that's Janet Jackson's middle name. I love Janet Jackson. So that's where I got those two names from. Those two babies travel with me everywhere. TNR, I'm glad you asked that, because TNR is Trap, Neuter, Return. So it's the humane alternative for death and euthanasia for stray and feral cat populations. So it's the process where I go out, I catch the cats in humane traps so they're not hurt or injured in any way. Catch them in humane traps. I take them to low-cost spay and neuter clinics where they're spayed, neutered, vaccinated, and then return back to their colony. So it's to prevent overpopulation and spread disease. And I tell people all the time, it's humane population control. So if you like cats, it's good. If some crazy way you don't like cats, it's still good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's based on the idea that they have a right to live, you know, where they live. That not every right. animal wants to be in your house dealing with your needs for them.
Right.
Some don't want that.
Anybody
want
to be like this one here, this little spoiled girl.
I don't know why. So how hard is TNR? And I know you said even as a kid, like, you were probably already intuiting what cat's body language was, what messages you were getting. I bet you were trusting yourself, you know, to know which ones to play with. And like, how does that all come into play when you TNR? What does that look like?
You know, one of the great, because you asked it earlier and I didn't get the answer because I flipped off into something else. But one of the things that I've been doing since I was little that I didn't know that's, you know, and I'm not taking credit for it. I'm sure people were doing it before me, but slow blinks. Long before I ever understood a scientific reason behind slow blinks with a cat, I would always do that when I was younger. I would slow blink because it seemed it was almost second. It came clear that if somebody is staring at you like this, just wide-eyed looking at you, and they don't blink, they probably don't trust you. They watching you. So it made sense that if a cat gave me a slow blink, they trust me. And usually after they slow blink, they roll and show you their belly. Like, since I was young, I remembered that. It made sense to me that they would, once they slow blink, they let me know I'm not watching you like a hawk.
Yeah.
Like, you might be okay. And then shortly after that is usually they're rolling their back and they show me their belly. And that's basically saying, hey, we good, man. Like, I'm letting my guard down with you by showing you my belly. So those are the type of things that's stuck with me since a kid all the way until now, which after listening to people like Jackson Galaxy and Kitten Lady and learning from the millions of women that I didn't learn from, that's actually a thing. Like, that's back so then, cool. I was doing it when I was young, but it's actually a thing. It's a scientific reason behind it.
That's incredible. And also, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I've only been a part of a couple TNR missions. And by being a part of, I mean that I was bringing out like apple juices and fruit snacks. Cause I'm like,
it helps.
I'm like, it is sitting in the dark night, quietly watching. I have never, for a person who is addicted to doing and moving like me, I'm going to actually say never been a part of something more necessary and uncomfortable at the same time than being a part of any TNR work. I'm like, you just sort of be here.
Yeah.
I don't understand, Sterling. You be here watching and waiting and trusting. I, it's next level. I don't understand. How do you deal with it, especially on the cats that maybe you're not going to get those slow blinks for a long time?
Right. It's, you know, it is a difficult thing, but I'll say, if you gotta, for one, you gotta enjoy anything you're doing. But if you're not into that, if you're just not into cat rescue, one of the things I always say is like, it's similar to fishing. Even I say, I don't eat meat and I don't fish, but for people that like that, it's kind of what you're doing here. You kind of fishing, but I try to make it fun all the time. Like, I'm going into a colony like I'm Rambo, like I'm setting traps. I'm putting my gear on. I'm hyping myself up. I'm hyping my volunteers up. We might do some chest bumps. Like, we out here about to do it. I want it to be fun and as positive as possible, because it can get to a point to where you just sitting there like, oh my goodness, please go in this trap. Like, please get in the trap. So it can get a little tedious like that. But again, that was the whole concept behind me and my vehicle and living in it, is because my home is with me. My cat is with me. I'll sit here forever. I'll sit here for a week till I catch the cat that I'm trying to catch. So,
God, I love that commitment. It makes me think about my foster dogs and like that idea of like, shaping behavior, not telling them what I want them to do, not forcing them, not teaching them in a way that's like imposing my expectations on their lives, but just shaping what they naturally do to get a certain result that is in line with what I like. And it's so tedious. It's so tedious. It's so much watching and paying attention to the right moment. And I only know that because of other people's reactions to like, but I love it.
Right.
I love it. It doesn't mean that it's not dull sometimes. But isn't it weird how like everything's got a grind to it? And if you're willing to sit with the grind, then it sort of tells you what something means to you.
Yeah. That's what they say. Trust the process. Like, it's that grind phase. And then that's the thing, like I'll say to life and people general, is identifying what you like. What you really like to do, what you really love. That's as simple as that may seem. I don't think a lot of people get to identify with what they love and what they like to do. And when you find that, it's easy to have that grind. It's easy to grind and do it so much. Like, if you know what you want to do, you can do it all day. And that right there is that's a big deal.
I have to, I'm into that. Like, that is 100%. That is the ticket, because then you'll even find lessons in the dull and the tedium and in the grind itself. There'll be gifts coming out of there that you didn't expect because you were willing to sit with it. And I think it's scary for people maybe to ask the questions and find what they love. I think you have to be willing to lose something maybe, whether it's, you know, it's like you can either go after and get fill in the blank, or you can be sort of addicted to the story behind why you don't get fill in the blank, but you can't have both. Do you miss the music? Do you miss your career in music, or do you feel like you bring it into your life still?
No, I still, the music, you know, it's weird because the music, I don't miss the music. I still do cat raps, even though at one point I didn't want to merge those two worlds. I felt like my music was serious, like it was my music. And then to make cat songs about it was almost like a mockery of my actual music. So for a minute, I didn't even want to mix the two, but I saw how it could help, how I could get other people's other different demographics attention on TNR and cat rescue by using music. So I don't miss it at all. And it's crazy because, like I said, I could still do it with cat raps, but it almost seems like everything with music and entertainment was for me to do this. And I would have never thought that like that before. I would have never felt like, okay, being on stage and performing and entertaining, those things, and then going to the military, those things were going to help me do this cat rescue. It wouldn't have even made sense. It wouldn't have even made sense if you would have explained it to me. I would have been like, how can that help that? But really, when you see in cat rescue, when you see us pulling the heartstrings and we tell the sad stories and everything, that's good. That's needed. But I feel like we needed to champion some of this stuff and make it look rock star so we can get more people interested and engaged and want to do it. So it's like everything with music feel like I was supposed, it was supposed to bring me to this, which is so weird because I never would have thought that. It would have never made sense that somehow you're going to go from this gangster rapper to rescuing cats and it'll all make sense.
Girly, I'm going to just make a declaration that all the hours you have spent, you know, TNR and connecting with animals, sitting and waiting, have made you very mindful and maybe a little bit enlightened. That's my, I'm going to just declare that maybe there's some Buddha stuff going on there, because that is an amazing outlook to be able to be like, it all brought me to this and it all actually makes sense, instead of looking at your past as a colossal amount of evidence to prove that you've made bad choices. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
Instead of looking and being like, wow, these are the consequences of all my mistakes and here I stand. Like, you can believe that if you want to, but it's much nicer to be like, look at how everything brought me here, because there's something so good out there moving me, gently nudging me here. I would
tell anybody to follow your heart, your love, your passion. Try to figure that out more than over anything, over money or anything else. Like, go for that, because it is a different. I was doing the music stuff. I was on tours. I was about to go on one of the most successful tours I would have done. And I stopped and did cat rescue. And I remember thinking to myself, hey, I'll live under a bridge before I do something that doesn't fulfill me in certain ways no more. Like, if I do something that's gonna be for anything, it can't just be money. Like, money can be involved in it, but I can't, money is, it's not gonna sustain me. It's actually not that difficult to get to if you're willing to depreciate, to sell yourself out for it in certain ways. So it was like, I remember saying that, like, I live under a bridge before I do something that doesn't fulfill me all the way, like inside, not just looking cool or buying stuff. And that was like, that's why I say follow your heart, because that was the thing that's when I found what I wanted to do all the way.
I love that's your wiring, that's who you are, that you need that passion. I think that's really special. I think you can learn that, but I think it's really unique to be born with it, you know?
Yeah, it's weird to be born with it and then realize other people don't feel that way.
You capitalists.
Like, you can imagine all my friends that was telling me, like, my friends was literally about to do an intervention on me when I decided to leave rap to go to cat rescue. They was like, man, we was about to do an intervention on you. Felt like you just lost your mind. Like, you kept talking about the cats. You didn't even care about money no more. You it's like you stopped trimming your beard. It got bad. Like, and I was like, they talking about doing an intervention on me. I'm thinking, this is the happiest I've been in my life. Like,
oh my God, that is so telling. You know what's funny? You said, you wrote something on your website about how, like, what you're saying about your friends makes me think about it. You wrote something about how, like, people are the problem in animal rescue. It's not the animals, it's the people, or something. You wrote something about that. So it's like, I would love for you to talk about that, but I just love the idea of all your friends sort of getting in the way and you're like, I am following my bliss, you guys.
Right.
You are creating obstacles to my bliss.
And that's people, that's friends and family that's not even in cat rescue or animal welfare that was just in the way. But the problem with people too, what I was saying in that on my site is talking about people in animal welfare and rescue. Like, our biggest enemy, one of our biggest enemies, if not the biggest enemy, is compassion fatigue and burnout. Those are the two biggest enemies in most service fields of service. Like, even a social worker deals with compassion fatigue and burnout. So in most fields of service, we suffer from that, especially in animal rescue. We suffer from compassion fatigue and burnout, and that's not coming from the animals we can't save or the lack of resources. Majority of the time is coming from other people.
Yeah.
Like, you come in, we come into animal welfare and rescue expecting to see the sad stories. We expect to see the hurt animals. We want to rescue them. We adopt the tripods and the one-eyed cats, like my homie Captain Patch. Like, we expect to see that. But what we don't expect is that the people doing the same thing we're doing working against us or being overly critical of one another. Like we have that so much in rescue. And I know it comes from a place of extreme care, but I think a lot of times, and you know, I haven't said this outright like this a lot, but I'm saying it now, is a lot of times in rescue right now, currently, a lot of people are walking around burnt out and they don't know it. They don't know that they burnt out.
Yeah, I think they're
on edge most of the day, most of the time. Everything is like a competition for funds, for recognition. You see them complaining, and they forgot that volunteering is a positive thing. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to make you feel good when you volunteer or when you do rescue. And a lot of times, that's why I say it's us, it's the people in animal welfare that we become overcritical and hard on each other. We run each other off and we make it hard to engage new people. Because I, like, one of the things that I do is try to engage new people. And I've heard it so many times where people are like, hey, y'all fight each other like crazy in there. Like, I'm not going to come over and help y'all. I don't know if I want to be in that when y'all are fighting each other all the time. Yeah. And I get that in both worlds, as a vegan and as an animal welfare person. It's like, y'all are so on each other.
I don't know what it's about, but it's been coming up a lot in conversation lately. So I'm so glad you bring it up, because I see it even like as a shelter volunteer on that end, like people who almost get pushed away from adopting because it's just so unpleasant, the process. And yeah. I think I used to get mad about it, and now I don't get mad. I actually look at those people as an opportunity to learn about boundaries, because what I see in those people is that they're not willing to let in chaos, noise, judgment, anger. Like, they don't want to deal with that stuff.
Right.
I'm willing to deal with that stuff. I made that choice, but they don't want to.
They have
found a way to make peace with themselves if they go buy a dog, so that they don't have to deal with that, because that's a boundary for them. And I'm honestly still, you know, I still wish they would adopt their dogs and not buy their dogs, because it's all supply and demand, or cats or bunnies. Yeah. But at the end of the day, nobody's all good and nobody's all bad. And so I'm really trying to work on, the gift that they give me is to see that they've drawn a hard boundary, that they don't want to deal with that shit.
Right.
And I cannot say that I blame them. I think you touched on something so interesting about rescuers being burned out. And I hadn't thought about it, but when you're burned out and you are absolutely neglecting yourself and there's no self-care and you feel like you're not seen and you're not heard and you're just existing for every other creature, then you're fucking mad.
Right. It's one of the biggest, like I said, it's one of the biggest things that hurt us, is that compassion fatigue and burnout. And the fact that so many people don't know that they're burnt out.
Yeah.
Like traveling around the country doing rescue and TNR with people and seminars. And I done been, like I said, in almost every city doing TNR with folks. And so many times I see where this group is doing TNR and right around the corner is another group doing TNR, and they don't talk to one another and they won't talk to one another. Somebody doesn't like the other person and they are mad. They are not going to deal with one another. And it's like, before we get to the basic action of setting the traps and rescuing the cats, we got to have therapy amongst the people, because the reasons that they're not liking each other have nothing to do with cats, nothing to do with the actual rescue. So you got to set that stuff aside, whatever you think they said or this person said or that was said or whatever, and help the animals. That's what it's about. And it should be an enjoyable process. That's so much of what I'm trying to do and bring back now. It should be high fives and hugs when we out here. It should not be burnt out people fighting and on edge. It can't be that way.
God, I hope this episode is called High Fives and Hugs. That just made me so happy.
High Fives and Hugs.
You know, my parents are immigrants and I write about them a lot. They came from Havana, from Cuba. And I write about them a lot because they're so brave. You know, my mom was 9 years old. My dad was 13 when they came. My mom came alone. My dad came with his mother and siblings, but it was hard for the husband, for the fathers, because they had jobs and all their money was being turned into nothing. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. But I bring it up because, you know, I'm a middle child. I like to complain about my parents. And lately I've been writing about it and thinking about how brave they are. And also how, when you don't recognize your trauma and you don't deal with it, and you talked about therapy, right? You don't get support for yourself. Then you put it sort of squarely on the shoulders of your children or the people around you, the people, you know, and then it's up to them now to get the help, or then they're going to put it on. And maybe we do that with animals too. Maybe do that with animal rescue. Like, if we don't deal with our stuff, we put it squarely on the shoulders of these animals that we help.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you got to think, most people, like myself, most people in rescue, that especially the ones that dive in and just become completely engulfed in it, a lot of us come from some type of trauma or abuse, something to that extent. We're looking for something else to fill some type of void. In stuff like NA, Narcotics Anonymous, and things like that, they tell people, once you get to a certain point, you should go sponsor other people. And that's, in a sense, that is what so many people in rescue are doing. They're going, instead of a person, they're sponsoring the animals and everything now. Wow. So they're, all of that emotion and passion in that is dumped right into that. And that's, you know, a lot of times we end up dealing with our own issues or forget what it's really about and who it's really about. It's about the animals, and it's about a positive experience. It can't be, you know, fighting, even though, like I said, I know a lot of people, it comes from that, but it's supposed to be a healing space. If we don't keep it that, then
it's so interesting. Yeah. I love what you're talking about. And I love even you use the word recognition, and it's like, so if you are saving animals and you're pure about it and you want to save animals, but then you're noticing like that guy or that girl or them over there, they're getting accolades and I'm not, then something starts to happen, right? Some little creepy voice where it's like, oh, you're not important, or you don't matter, or you're a doormat, or you're weak, or I don't know, whatever that inner critic is saying. And then it becomes, there's a moment, and I don't know where it is, where it becomes not, I'm here to save animals, but why am I not getting anything? Why doesn't anyone see me saving animals? And I wish we moved slower. I wish we moved like people who do DNR, slower enough to hear that moment. Because if you stop in that moment, then that muscle doesn't even get to build up. You don't get to have that thought guiding you. And when you make that switch, something beautiful, which is your real desire to find solace in giving back, gets tarnished by all the mundane, egocentric, superficial, ego status stuff. And it makes me sad. Animals are so much better than that. They are louder than all of that stuff.
Right.
But you gotta be able to pay attention to that moment, that switch. How do we teach people that?
It's wild because I've dealt with that a lot. I've had people message me and say, you know, I've been trapping cats longer than you, and who are you to get that recognition or that stuff that you get? And like, I've had people say that to me.
Oh my God.
I've had all types of stuff. And again, as soon as that's said, at first I would get upset. You get combative or defensive. You want to defend yourself. Like, how dare you? I've trapped thousands of cats. Why would you say that to me? Like, I've learned quick. Like, that's not even the approach. They are approaching me like that because they're burnt out. Right then and there, it's coming. It's on the cusp, or it's there. But at that point, when you hear that, when you feel that, at that instant, it's become about you or the people or things other than the animals. It's not even enjoyable no more at that point. And I've seen it. I've seen people that I've worked with, and it's like, I could see when they start complaining about so many things, and a lot of it isn't even the cat. It's the processing somebody else is doing. It's the way somebody else is doing this, or someone else isn't doing this enough, but it's so much anger. And I think in order to change that, like, some of the stuff we have to start doing, for one, is we have to stay compassionate all across the board. for some, it's, I don't know how we have this thing of saying, well, and I know this is a popular statement and I've said it too, where, you know, I'm not a people person. I'm an animal person. I don't really like people like that. I like my cats. That's, you know, I've said that, but that's a problem. That's a problem. We have to be able to be, we have to be able to have our compassion on for animals and for people, for all living creatures, because that's where a lot of this stuff comes, where it starts at, where the burnout and compassion fatigue comes, because it's what we do and say to one another, or what we don't do or don't say to one another, that starts and then gets it going. The animals that keep us fulfilled. We love, that's why we're here. The animals that keep us fulfilled in the right way, but it'll be us going at one another that we gotta stop that. We gotta stop some of the habits. Like, even some of this is, and me and my buddy Nathan the Cat Lady are gonna do a skit about this, a funny skit.
I can't wait to see this skit.
Because it's the rescue mentality. It's like two rescuers meet up, they run into each other on the streets, and the conversation is the saddest thing in the world. Because you'll hear, it's like, hey, how you doing? Well, I just got finished feeding three colonies over there. I just picked up the cat with the two broken legs. Now I'm going to pick up the cat with the sinus infection. We don't have enough money for the sinus surgery. Hopefully we can raise the funds. I don't know. I'm going broke, but I'm going to go pawn this vehicle over here so we can get money for the surgery. How you doing? Well, most of the people in my family got bad health, but I'm rescuing these cats and I'm doing, and it's like, it's almost like a competition of who is suffering and putting most on the line. You know, it's such a sad,
but we get something from that, right? It serves us, it gives us some, it's giving us something.
Yeah, it's giving us something. It's something to, but I would like to just turn it around a little bit to where it's a compliment type feeling or something. Not I'm in the trenches just killing myself. Suffering. It needs to be like the high five and hug. If I run into a rescue person, it needs to be like seeing your teammate or your favorite cousin at the cookout. I see you doing your thing. High five. Like, you're doing it. You're killing it out there. Let's go. Like, it needs to be a more positive interaction amongst us. Gotta fix the fixers. If we start that and have more positive interactions between us, it'll combat some of it. I think that's the start, though. I think that's the start. We gotta remember this is it.
I totally agree with you. And I'm gonna try to start doing it. It's like, I'm a 12-stepper myself, and you act as if, you fake it till you make it. Like, be the thing. It's, you know, attraction, not promotion. Be the thing. I don't have to just be high fives and hugs. Be positive when I run into the rescue, instead of wearing my badge of, no, I'm suffering more. And then looking at their badge of suffering more and being like, oh, that's a nice badge. Maybe you are suffering more. Right. You know, also this, another 12-step thing that came to my mind is, you said this idea of like having compassion for the person who's burnt out and being like, oh, it's on the cusp or it's already there, or looking at that anger and having compassion even for that. I used to have a sponsor who would say to me, whenever I was mad or upset by anything, she'd say, pray for the person. Even if the prayer is, I wish that asshole all the love in the world. Like, she's like, you don't have to Pollyanna it. You don't have to be like this beautiful soul. You can just be like, I pray for that asshole to have joy and peace. Amen. You know, but pray for them. Like, they're nasty because they need you. Nasty because they need you. Yeah. And we know that with cats, and we know that with dogs. We know that, right? We know that with an animal that we're like, I'm going to give you time. I can give you that grace. But I don't know why it's so hard to extend that to people.
It is tough. And as I say it, I want it to be known that I have to constantly work on it myself. Like, it's not something that, you know, it's a constant thing. It's just like in most things, you're constantly working towards it and to be better with it. But it's me. It's plenty of times, like the guy telling me he won't let me fix his cat because he don't want his cat to lose his manhood. I have to instantly see him as the tripod cat that bit me. You know what I mean? Like, You're just hurt. Like, I could see it in the cat, but in this guy here telling me about this cat gonna lose his manhood, I want to knock him out. But I have to see it like, you know, the same compassion that I would have for that tripod cat. If that tripod, that three-legged cat bite me, I know that it's probably scared and been through hell with humans. And I can instantly understand that and have that compassion. And I have to make sure that I can do that with other people in rescue. Because again, regardless of my personal opinion, it's about the mission. It's about helping the cats. Yeah. I tell that to volunteers about bumper stickers, believe it or not. Keeping the mission. Like, you can have a bumper sticker on your car that'll take the conversation to somewhere else when you go in the neighborhood to rescue cats. And I've had that. Wow. I've had volunteers where they don't understand why they go in a neighborhood and they keep getting the battles or the resistance that they get. And then I come out and I see they have a religious sticker, a super religious or a super political sticker, bumper sticker on their car. And I'm like, hey,
you're inviting.
Yeah, take that sticker off your car when you come in this neighborhood. Don't have that stick. Just stick to the cat stickers. Like, don't make it about, don't give somebody else room to make it about something else other than the cats. 100%. And I've seen that mistake happen so many times. It's like, you should believe in what you believe in, but that's, you got to know sometimes that'll make the mission harder.
Yeah. And nobody, you don't have to agree with everyone. You don't have to agree with anyone on everything in order to help animals. Right. Is there an animal that has changed you that you can really picture when you see that guy who tells you that he's not going to neuter his cat so he doesn't lose his manhood? Is there an animal that's changed you that really comes to mind that's like, oh, okay, if I could only picture them as so-and-so? Is there one?
Everything I do in cat rescue goes back to Rick James. My cat, Rick James, he wasn't my first cat. He was probably just the most impactful relationship I ever had. Like, but he definitely wasn't the first cat that I've been around. Like, I had ferals and strays growing up that I was around. One named Peepers. I love Peepers, but he was an outdoor cat. But Rick James, my cat Rick James was by far my most impactful relationship. Changed me as a whole. Because for one, he was with me through so many different phases of my life. Like, understanding, like, I've worked a billion jobs, corporate America, McDonald's, IHOP, Burger King, mobile detailing, whatever job you can think of, I've worked it at some point. And Rick has been through a lot of those phases with me, finding myself and understanding what I really want to do. But on the rescue side of it, back then when I got Rick, which would now be about 15 years ago, maybe when I first got Rick. And at the time, I didn't know nothing about rescue. I loved cats, animals, everything. I knew I wanted a cat, but I bought Rick from a breeder. I got him declawed. I didn't know any of that stuff wasn't cool. I didn't know none of that. So, you know, throughout the process, developing a relationship with him, learning how certain food that I was feeding him wasn't good, having him declawed, that's like taking off the tip of your fingernail, that's not good. Getting him from a breeder wasn't even an idea. That wasn't the move. And so everything I do in rescue go back to him, because in my mind at that time, I was a vegetarian. I loved him. I loved my cat. And I knew everything I needed to know. Like, you couldn't tell me nothing about that. You couldn't tell. Like, I felt like I loved him and that was it, but I didn't know nothing. I didn't know a lot. So a lot of situations when I see that guy who's saying, yeah, I don't want my cat to lose his manhood or stuff like that, I see and think of Rick. I go back to Rick and I think about me. He don't know, just like I didn't know. He's saying, talk about his cat losing his manhood. That's not how that works, man. That's not how that works. So in so many situations, I see that. I see Rick. I see people they probably mad because they burnt out or they just not educated, just like me, and probably care more. They probably do care. Yeah. I posed this. I said this the other day. I haven't met anyone in animal welfare that got involved for money or because they want to abuse animals. It's not the case. So a lot of the disagreements and things that we have is a misunderstanding, or we don't like somebody else's process, but that don't make it wrong. And that doesn't mean that they're trying to abuse animals. So that initial thought process, that's why everything, when I hear the drama and everything, oh, baby, sorry, Alanis just trying to jump up on it. So Alanis is like, hey.
He's like, you're talking about Rick a lot more than
right. Like, okay, he's talking about Rick, but what about me? But I say that, I always say that, and think back about Rick and our relationship, how much I learned from him, the patience I've always had, I had with him, and developing our relationship. And I think back, that's what helps keep me focused. Like, I thought I knew it, I thought I had it figured out. And so many people, no matter what, they feel like they got it. Like, I know, I love my cat. I love my dog. You don't have to tell me nothing. I already know. So I that always remind me to keep that patience. Because back then, somebody could have been like, don't do this or don't do that. And I probably would have been like, you have no idea this relationship I have with this cat. This, like, this is family to me. You have no idea to question me.
I love this ability you have to be humble enough to talk about even the things that, as a rescuer, maybe were not ideal, quote unquote, mistakes, which aren't mistakes. Because if you make a decision that leads to the fallout of so much good, then I would argue that it, in and of itself, that is not a mistake. So,
right.
But to say, like, no, it's because I went to a breeder, and it's because I declawed him, and it's because of the decisions I made that I knew were not, I am now standing against. It's because I did it that I am here now. That's why I can connect to people, and that's why I can do this work, because I am willing to say, me too. Like, same. I've been there.
Right. That's why I try to tell people all the time about the recognition thing, or if someone's saying, hey, you know, who are you to get this type of recognition? Or I've been doing it like this. Like, everybody that's doing volunteer work and doing something outside of themselves like that, is you're a king, you're a queen, you're a champion. That's good. It's just as good as anybody else doing it. I'm a tool for this. I'm a product of so many women being out there and needing a message to go further. That's what I am. So if you see me getting this recognition, it's us getting this recognition. And it's happening because it's coming from a different place. I'm a black man living out his vehicle rescuing cats. That's crazy. You know, that's like Eminem and rap. Like, that's of course it's going to gain attention. But when it does, just like in rap, Eminem being different and rare, he brought a different recognition and he helped the culture. He still helped rap. He helped hip hop out. And that's the same way with me. I'm a tool here to champion a lot of people before me like that. But it's not to overturn or say I'm better. I say king or queen, that's not me saying it's better. And I hope people understand that, because it's TNR that's being championed. It's rescue that's being championed.
Sterling, I'm certain that when one being wins, everybody wins. I feel that about creative work. I mean, it is the point of it all in animal welfare. You know, anybody winning is everybody winning. And like, that's just the facts. How can my listeners support you, follow you, cheer you on? First of all, I want everyone to know that, you know, for what it's worth, Trapking Humane Cat Solutions is a nonprofit organization. So if you're looking for a place to make, like, I don't know, for your kid's birthday instead of gifts, because you're tired of plastic stuff, you want to make make a $20 donation here for, you know, in honor of your kid, my kid's birthday. That's a great place. This is a great place for it to go. Or you just have a mid-year donation that you want to give, or you have some extra cash, or you want to task yourself to not drink a coffee at Starbucks for the next 4 months and save that money to donate to Sterling's efforts to TNR. I'm just coming up with ideas for you. But I mean, where can we stay in contact with you, follow you, and champion your work, which is championing animals?
TrapKingHumane.org is the website. And then I'm trying to get better at social media, but I'm usually on Instagram and Facebook. So Instagram is the_original_TrapKing. So that's at Instagram. And from there, you'll be able to find me and find the real superstar, who is Demita Joe, who has her own account, my cat.
So, Janet Jackson's middle name.
Right. Facebook, any cat group, like there are a ton of cat rescue groups in Facebook groups in every city. I'm probably in just about all of them. So you can find me there too on Facebook.
I'm glad you are. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for coming on The Animal That Changed You and for being not only our friend, but a friend to all those cats out there lucky enough to know you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you all. Thank you for having me. And yeah, spread that love, y'all.
High fives and hugs.
Right. High fives and hugs.
Thanks for tuning in to The Animal That Changed You, a weekly podcast that features extraordinary people talking about the extraordinary animal that changed their life. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Follow us on Instagram at The Animal That Changed You and tell your friends. If you've got a story about an animal that's changed your life, DM me, tell me about it, or tag us. We would love to hear. We appreciate you. And honestly, we love your animals so much. Thanks for being here.
For more great iRule podcasts, visit iRulePod.com. That's IROARPOD.com.